Blog Talk Radio.
Could have it, baby. Woo, that's a beautiful song. Thank you guys so much for tuning in today to Soul Eye Records Radio. This is Wardell Potts, and we got my boy Greg hanging out with us. What's up, Greg?
Hi, Wardell.
Hey, Greg, I really appreciate you tuning in. I know that you are all beat up emotionally due to the stuff that's happening with your friend, and I'm so sorry for your loss, man, but I know that Whitney Houston is so big in your life, and she meant so much to you, and I thought this would really help uplift your spirits a little bit. So,
yeah.
How are you feeling? How are you feeling?
Emotional.
Yes. I want to just send my condolences to your friend and the family.
Oh,
I'm very sorry for his loss, and But and yours, obviously. And man, oh man. So this is like an oxymoron for you, because at one hand you're very sad, and the other hand you're very excited about your girl that you love. You are just caught. Man, I'm so, that's crazy. But your love for Whitney is obviously showing, because you still called in. So what would you like to say in regards to our girl, your girl Whitney?
Oh, well, since the first album in 1985, I've been a huge fan. And particularly, you know, any live performances sort of sent that voice so stratospheric. I posted about four of my favourite live performances on the in the comments and the postings. So if anybody wants to check them out, and the performances that I watch over and over and over again, time after time, still get emotional.
Yes, yes. What was it about Whitney that that really grabbed your heart? Because, you know, there were a lot of controversies. I mean, a lot of stuff going on. The people were angry with her for getting with Bobby Brown and thought that she destroyed her, not just her career, but her life, because she got with him.
Yeah.
And so people started, you know, rejecting her because of it. And so, but you know, she just was doing Whitney regardless of what other people, you know, thought or said. She was just going to live her life her way. It was her life, and she had the right to do that. As you know, but you fell in love with her. So can you tell me or tell us why you had a different approach?
Well, because you know, there are very few people that are put on this planet with the package that she was given, and I don't think anybody could really argue that, whether you like the voice or you don't. The pack, you know, it's like God created this incredible voice. I mean, an iconic voice, a voice of a generation. But then God sort of said, well, you know, we won't just give you the voice, we'll make you beautiful as well. And, you know, it just doesn't get any better. But unfortunately, the only person that didn't really get that was Whitney herself. And I think that people did blame Bobby Brown, but in actual fact, Whitney and Bobby were actually made for each other, but it was a very, very toxic relationship. And the way I understand it is that Whitney introduced Bobby to drugs, and Bobby introduced Whitney to alcohol. Well, you know, if that's not toxic, I don't know what is. But the thing is with the voice, with Whitney's voice, it wasn't drugs or alcohol that ruined the voice. It was, Whitney was basically a chain smoker. And being called a super fan, which I think I am, a lot of people may not have really noticed this as much as I noticed it. Now, don't forget that in 1985, there was no internet. All the things that I would hear or read about Whitney were just in newspapers and Blues and Soul and magazines like that. But I remember that when her first album came out in 1985, and then her second album came out in 1987, then the third album came out in 1990. I already noticed a big difference in her voice on each album. Even the first and the second album, if you listen very closely, there's a very, very definite difference in her voice. The first album, her voice was much shriller. It was more shrill. And then the second album, and definitely the third album, the I'm Your Baby Tonight album, her voice got a lot deeper and a lot huskier. And when someone is a vocalist and they're a singer professionally, so they're using the voice all the time, a smoker, especially a chain smoker, developed on the vocal cords, and it makes the voice huskier and deeper. And that was exactly what happened to Whitney's voice over the years.
And well,
lots of people don't know that, but I can tell that on each album.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, so in 1985, you became a fan. And
yeah.
So were you judging or not judging? Were you worried or were you not worried?
Because I knew nothing about her personally at the time. It's only really in the last, 15 years of the internet that we've been able to really find things out. I thought Whitney was what Clive Davis sold her to be, the girl next door, that's what I thought Whitney was. But there was definitely another side to Whitney. She could be a bad girl, I think. She was such a pro, such a professional. And obviously, a mother taught the girl really well.
Yeah. Well, she grew up in that family with, you know,
absolutely.
All these amazing...
She was smoking and dabbling in drugs from the age of about 15, because she was smoking and dabbling in drugs with her brothers. So, I don't know. It was just... Was it Whitney rebelling? I kind of think so. I think she...
Well, you know, I think... As a young person, we all tried, you know, different, not all of us, I can't speak for everyone, but I know a lot of my friends when I'm talking, we all were trying different things, just kind of trying to navigate our way through life as a young person wanting to grow up and being an adult. And so you thought, you know, you start to drink and smoke a little bit, you start to feel like an adult and not realizing that it's a nasty habit that actually forms in the process, and then before you know it, it's a part of who you are, and you can't get off of it until you are able to recognize that it is a problem, and then seek help to get away from it. So, but a lot of us have tried doing different things, and really, it wasn't necessarily because we were stressed out or depressed about something. It was just trying as a kid, you know? And so, but do you have information in regards to why you think that she was trying to make an escape from something?
Yes. My own thoughts after studying this for many years, and it is only my opinion. It's not based on any great facts, but I believe that her and her brothers, they were brought up very, very, very strictly by City Houston, religiously, very, very strictly. And I think that sometimes I think that that's difficult for kids to accept. And there's a story that both Whitney and City have both told separately. And I think Whitney was about 16 or 17. She wasn't a young kid. And Sissy had been asking Whitney to tidy her room for ages, her bedroom. And Whitney hadn't done it. So one day, Sissy shouts through to Whitney, who was in a bedroom, I want that bedroom cleaned up now. And Whitney said in a low voice, go to hell.
Ooh.
And Sissy shouts, come here, Nippy, because that was her nickname was Nippy. And Missy said, what did you just say to me? And Whitney said, go to heck. And Sissy said, no, you didn't. And I'm going to show you where hell is. And they both said, she whooped her butt.
Yeah.
Now, for a 16 or 17-year-old who, okay, so she maybe should have tidied her room, but to me, that's a little bit extreme.
Yeah, so, well, you know, back in the day, people get you know, kids got spankings, and so so all of them didn't react the same as others. Some did, you know, rebel and took it very hard. You know, I remember, I think, I'm not sure if my cousin or my sister, somebody said they got a spanking one time. Oh, it was my wife. When she got a spanking one time, that was it. She never messed up again because she could not believe it. And she never wanted to ever feel that again. So she, you know, she completely changed. And that was the purpose of it, was to get, you know, the kids to respect. But, you know, as time went on, it became a problem. People were saying that's abusive. And next thing you know, you call a 911 and the cops are getting involved. And then they're taking your children away. So, you know, like, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. Because nowadays they're saying... Nowadays they're like, you know, these kids are way out of control. That's because, you know, it's hard to discipline them now because so how do you find that balance, you know? And so I don't want to say too much against her mom about it, but at the same time, Whitney was a human being that had responded to it in her own way. And so you have to respect that. And like I said, my wife was freaked out. You know, my brother-in-law wasn't. He got whoopings all the time. it didn't affect him the same way it affected her. So, you know, and probably the same thing with Whitney and her family. Her brothers probably didn't affect them, but for her, it was different. And so we have to individualize everything because people have the right to feel what they feel. And you can't take that away from people. And if she felt violated or she felt like she, you know, I thought you loved me. How could you do that? You know, you just never know what a child is thinking or a person is thinking.
And also, I mean, even though I've just voiced my opinion, it's nothing but my opinion. It's based on the facts that I believe I've read and understood. And the story about Whitney getting a butt whooped by her mother. Kate did come from both of them. So they both did say that. Now, the thing is, I'm not saying that things like that would have had that big impact on Whitney. I think what had the biggest impact on Whitney was signing, as you well know, Woodell, the elusive contracts, the recording contracts. And of course, don't forget, we're going back to the early 80s here when you've already talked on your show about that black music wasn't played on MTV, and it was Michael Jackson that broke that barrier. And also, when Clive Davis signed up Whitney, his vision for Whitney was to become really a white Whitney Houston. And then the documentary that came out about 4 or 5 years ago now, there's been a few, but one of them was actually called Can I Be Me? And the impact of that title, basically, in my opinion, as a big fan, came from the fact that Whitney was molded into this global superstar by Clive Davis. And don't get me wrong, Clive Davis is an absolute musical, and well, I don't know whether he's a musical genius, but he's a musical business genius. He did make her what she was, but I think that the Whitney Houston that we see on stage wasn't the real Whitney Houston. She was just a girl from the hood, and that's what she wanted to be. And I think that she couldn't cope with the persona that the world then wanted her to be. I just don't think she coped with it.
Wow, that's an interesting perspective there. I never thought about that.
Yes, you couldn't cope.
Yeah. I think they actually, didn't they bury her in New Jersey?
Yes, they did, yes.
Yeah. So, man, oh man, I tell you, it's you know, one thing of losing someone, but to lose your child, you know, or someone, you know, young that's, you know, in your family, to, it's like, they go before you. It's like, whoa, that's just,
well,
that's
yeah.
out of, yeah, that's, yeah, so, and, so, you know, my, you know, I just have to say, you know, thank you, Whitney, for giving us what you did give us. And, you know, I really admired her. I was proud of her. I was proud of her being able to take the gift that she was given and just really just come out of the gates just flying, you know, and yeah, and she just kept on. It was just the level of, I mean, the way that she was able to sing, man, it was so effortless. Yes, absolutely, the passion that she brought to the table with it. Thank you so much, my dear.
I'll tell you one thing about Whitney vocally that I've never known with any other vocalist in history, is that nobody played with the melody like Whitney did. None of her live performances even resemble the studio performances. She played with those runs and those notes. And one of the things that I always admired about her and still do is that she played with those notes and she played with those runs, and she never put a note wrong. She was always pitch perfect.
Yeah, she was gifted. She was truly gifted.
And you know, whatever was going on in her private life, which again, you know, is nothing to do with us, but you know, we all deal with trauma, we all deal with pain, we all deal with setbacks, curveballs. But to get on stage and deliver like she did is almost superhuman.
Right, yeah. Well, you know, I mean, it's the same thing with Michael. My husband, it came out the block. He came out and exploded, and he became, it was almost kind of like a male version of, you know, of Whitney. They were kind of like, you know, simultaneously doing this thing that was just amazing from two people who, you know, and I've seen them get together, and I thought they were doing an album. Did they ever do a record together?
No, it was planned.
It was planned, yeah.
She did with Jermaine. She did a couple of things with Jermaine.
Wow. Amazing. Yeah. All right. Listen, I 1 second. Let me just do this. Hey, guys. So I have to do something that's really important right now. Give me 1 second here. I'm trying to get this system set up. Something just happened crazy here in my system. Hey, listen, I'm gonna take a small break and then we'll come right back. Let's just take another listen to this beautiful lady that we're talking about. And this is a song I never heard. And I think Greggy sent me this song. My name is not Susan. We'll be right back.
Not alone.
Wow, that right there, I was thinking about, if she worked with Michael, that sounds like a song that she may have done, should have recorded with him, because it kind of has that Michael thing in the background thing going on there. And My Name Is Not Susan. But anyway, guys, thank you again. Hey, listen, I have a very special guest on by the producer and a person that worked with Whitney for 5 years or so. So let's just bring him on and let him tell his story and his relationship and just what he thought about Whitney. So Herman Jackson, are you there, my brother?
I'm here, yeah.
Awesome. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Oh, man, I'm blessed. I'm good, man. Also, I have my partner, my buddy, Greg's on the phone. Greg, say hi to...
Hi, Herman. It's nice to speak to
Herman.
You.
Yeah.
Hey, Greg.
Nice to speak to you.
Absolutely.
All right. Okay, so, yeah, Greg's over in the U.K., so if you hear that accent, that's what's happening. He's in the U.K.
All right, yeah. I do know that.
So Herman, why don't you first of all just tell us a little bit about you and who you are and how you ended up working with Whitney?
Okay, I am a musician, piano, keyboard, musician, producer, arranger, from Detroit. I was born in Detroit. Been in L.A. since 1984. I was 19. So I came out here, moved to L.A. where I was very young. And I started getting some good calls of some, good jobs. I got a call one night to leave the next day to go to New York to go do Radio City Music Hall with Aretha Franklin. And I had never worked with Aretha. And so I went and did the job, and Whitney came to the gig, and I met her then.
Okay.
I met her then. She her record was, maybe her first record was out.
First record. Okay.
Yeah. And and then I didn't see her for another 8-9 years, and I met Ricky Minor, who was her music director, and he started calling me to do little things with her. I didn't know he was kind of grooming me, getting me ready to I did MTV Awards with her in LA. And I subbed on a couple of rehearsals with her. Then when she needed somebody, they gave me a call, and I went and I did my first full gig with her was at Constitution Hall in D.C., HBO special. So it was a lot of pressure. And I was, I was much younger then. But I learned to embrace the pressure that goes along with being around somebody like Whitney, and I learned to enjoy it.
So how did you and Whitney? So you were playing with Aretha, and before. How did you start working with Whitney?
Piano player, and he's real good friend of mine, her piano player. And I was working with Aretha, and I was working with Gladys last night in the Pips, and I was also then I started working with Stevie, and I just became the next person in line, to play piano with her.
Okay, and this was like in 81.
This was the 90s. I started my first thing I did with her might have been 95, 90, 96.
Okay.
Yeah, the HBO special was 96. Okay. And I did a few things before her, before that, 95.
Okay.
I did something. She did a big show at the Universal Amphitheater, and I was in the house band. So we were, you know, running into each other on different gigs. I did a gig with somewhere with Gladys, and she was on the gig. We would run into each other. And, yeah.
And so,
Ricky called me.
Okay.
Ricky called me and said, hey, you know, she's doing this HBO special. Do you want to do it? Of course I want to do it. You know, she by that time she was pretty much established as the best in the business. And, you know, as a musician, you always want to work with the best. So I was very fortunate.
Okay, now when you first, like, started, when you those gigs came up and you got to meet this person, and obviously you said you worked with her for 5 years?
Yeah.
For five, yeah. So how was it just getting to know this lady that was one of the best in the business at that time?
Oh, it was really great. She was really, because of her upbringing, her growing up as the, you know, daughter, her mother, of course, who was a very established singer,
right.
Sissy Houston. Because of that, she had been around musicians her whole life.
Right.
So she was, as beautiful and striking as she was, she was one of the guys.
She's one of the guys.
Yeah, she was one of the guys, and she wanted to make sure her musicians were taken care of, and everything was first class. And
yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah, she was just wonderful to work with. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, was at this time was she married?
She was married.
Okay.
And that was, there was definitely a, like I said, she, when I started with her, she was the best in the business. And as those five years progressed, I saw the differences in her.
Oh. Okay.
That came from her marriage and her,
right,
substance abuse problems.
Yes. So was there anything that anyone, like, you know, I mean, did you get a close relationship with her? Was she listen to you if any of the guys in the group would say, you know, hey, you know, you need to calm down? Or was people more intimidated and afraid to say not to do that because they didn't want to lose their jobs?
Well, you know, there were some people. I was new, so I never really got to
never
the point where I could really go there. But
right.
The people that had been around her long, the other musicians, you know, the Kirk Whalums, Paul Jackson, the receivers, they definitely did what they could do to try to, you know,
help
keep her in a yeah, in a Christian direction, actually.
Right. Yeah, I didn't know. I mean, Paul Jackson, I should have known. He plays with everybody. Jeepers, creepers.
Yeah. Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. He plays with everybody.
He was in the band when I started.
Yeah. He's you know, man, we go way back. We've done stuff I didn't even know we did together. You know, because with overdubbing and stuff, people get to, you know, they just come in the studio after you already recorded and just lay down your parts. So, but
yeah.
Greg, do you have a question, Greg?
Well, first of all, let me just say that to actually be on the line with you and Herman and talking about Herman working with Whitney, I feel quite emotional. So I think you two better just keep talking.
Well, I just want you to know, Herman, that Greg is one of her biggest fans. I mean, he's been, you know, a fan of her since 85 and just, right, 85, right, Greg?
85, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, 85. And just been, you know, just constantly for ever since I've known him, it's always about Whitney, 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 Whitney. So the, I did this show today just as a tribute to Greg as well, to, you know, just, you know, because he's always, he helps us. He's one of the executive producers for our company. And so he is always helping between him and Astrid. They're always, you know, helping. But and so, by the way, Astrid told me to tell you hi, Greg. And okay. So it's a lot going on. And, you know, between Greg and myself, we're constantly talking every day. So I thought this would be a great show for him. But unfortunately, he sounds a little beat up because his one of his friends just lost his wife. So he's got this oxymoron thing going where he's happy that we're doing the show, but at the same time, he just lost someone. So, but anyway, I want to get back to you. So you've seen, as you've seen all this stuff, tell us something good. Tell us something that will lift our spirits up about Whitney that you experienced that not too many people have.
Yeah, she would always say to the musicians, you know, as far as hotels or car rides or whatever, if you're having a problem or something is not going like you want to go, don't hesitate to use my name and say, hey. So I'm with Whitney Houston, and see if that, you know, see if that will help you in whatever situation it is. So she, you know, she wasn't.
I love to hear that.
Oh, okay.
Was that?
I love to hear that. That's a good small.
Yeah, it was a small gesture, but it was important. To me, that she would just, you know, because she, I mean, there's a lot of artists are the opposite of that.
Right, right.
She was just very open and very, very protective of her band members. She definitely,
right.
and respectful of our talents, never took us for granted, never.
Very nice.
I believe that on tour she would put on an extra tour bus for if any of the band or the crew members had got very young children that needed to be away from everyone because of the challenges of children, that there was a separate tour bus where parents could take their children, and there were other children there and toys there. So, because she loved children, and
that
nobody wants to know about.
Definitely was family. It was
family.
It was definitely a family. It was a large family.
Mm-hmm.
It was one time I got sick on the road, and I was just, you know, sick for a couple of days, and then somebody said, well, why didn't you call the doctor? I said, who's the doctor? I said, though the doctor had been traveling with us. It was so many people in the group, I did not know that there was a doctor traveling with us. But yeah.
Wow.
Definitely was a large family. And
y'all had a doctor traveling? We didn't have that.
Yeah. Well, it was
only Whitney. Only Whitney.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That is
so
cool.
Well, why don't you just call the doctor, have him, you know, take care of you.
That's beautiful. Yeah. So, what gig did you guys do that kind of blew you away with Whitney?
That's my next question.
Like, what artist did y'all perform with that? Like, whoa, this now we are here.
My first gig. My first gig with her was an HBO special.
What?
It was just her. It was
wow.
Yeah. And
wow.
We did Diana Ross. We did a lot of the, you know, R&B classics. Sammy Davis Jr. You know, God Bless the Child. We did like a ton of stuff like that. Alfie.
Wow.
We did
yes.
I Love You Porgy.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Just a ton of great R&B black music.
Wow. That's excellent.
And it was televised, you know, and it turned out to be a great show.
Thank you.
That was my first gig. It was kind of nowhere to go from there.
Yeah, exactly. Like, where do we go from here? Jeez.
That's serious.
That's a wonderful start. Man. So let me ask you this. This is kind of a hard question. And I'm sorry for asking if it makes you uncomfortable. But when we lost Whitney, where was you? Like, and what was your thinking?
It's difficult, but I'm ready to talk to you. I haven't talked about it in a number of years. I saw her the day before she died.
Whoa.
The event she came to LA to do at the Beverly Hills Hotel, I was at the event running a rehearsal for somebody else. I think it was for Brandy, Monica, and Jesse J. So I was there rehearsing them. And as I was leaving, Whitney was coming in. And, you know, as usual, as soon as she came in, crowd of people just went into her. I saw her. She saw me, waved, said hello. And I kept going, not knowing that'd be the last time I saw her.
Wow.
The next day I was working somewhere. I was at the car wash. And I was listening to ESPN. And I heard on ESPN, I said, like, that can't be true. I just saw her. And I was also confused by ESPN. Why is the sports station, you know, talking about it?
Whitney,
well, of course.
Exactly.
Whitney Houston.
Right.
So I started getting some texts from the, from the guys I'd been working with. Their rehearsal was canceled. I wasn't actually doing the gig, but I was on the list because I had been, working with Jessica and Monica. So, it was
rough.
It was. I don't have a word for it.
Right.
It was really.
Sorry about that. So sorry.
I wish, of course, there's no way I could know. I wish I had spent a little longer.
Yeah.
Time, with her the day before.
Yeah.
But, you know.
How did she look when you saw? How did she look when you saw? Were you able to really size her up, or was just like, hey, and kept on moving?
Yeah, just quick hello. And I,
So she looked normal. She probably just looked normal.
She was normal, yeah. She was.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was no indication of anything.
What year was this?
This had to be 2012.
2005? No.
She died in 2012.
She died 2012.
Oh, 2012. Okay, yeah. Yeah.
Can I just tell you something quite sad? So anyway, on the Nothing But Love World Tour that she started in December, I think it was, 2009. I didn't get tickets for that tour because following her the way I have, I knew what to expect and I didn't want to see her. But she started the world tour off in Russia on I think it was December the 9th, 2009. And the following day, I immediately got on the internet to see what any reviews said about the show. And I've looked for this review since, and I think it might have been taken down from the internet. But the reviewer at the show said, word for word, he said, "The woman on stage before me looks like a woman who hasn't got long to live."
Wow.
Yeah, I wasn't on that tour. I had been gone for, I left in 2001.
Right.
I did, was her, one was 97, and the other one was 2000.
Uh-oh, can't hear you. We can't hear you.
She canceled a lot of dates on that tour.
Yeah,
you know, we would be in the lobby waiting, and we'd get a note that, okay, no show today.
Wow.
2000, she definitely was making the shows. Definitely 2000, she made most of the shows, and Bobby was with her in 2000. He was with her in 97 as well. But they were doing a duet thing at the end, him and her. And so, he kind of kept it together, I guess, to where they both were able to make the shows.
Okay. Wow.
I just want to know from you being inside that bubble, what was your impression of being around Bobby Brown?
Oh, I love Bobby.
Okay.
I love Bobby. Yeah, great guy. Just a great guy. You know, got a bad reputation.
Yeah.
Herman, your microphone is getting muffled.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, there you go. That's better. So, great guy with a bad reputation, right?
We all have our demons. And
right.
You know, his just happened to play out in a very public way.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, was he a good dad?
But he's a great guy. I've worked with him several times since then.
Oh, okay.
And you know, he's always good to work with. You know, and he loves the guys that were around back then. Always, just always respectful and nice and just loves to make music.
Herman, might you say, and again, you were inside the bubble, I'm outside the bubble, so I don't know, but I just always had the impression that Bobby Brown's reputation, I think he chased the bad boy reputation, but sadly, I think it was misguided. Would that be right or wrong?
That he chased the bad boy reputation?
Yeah, I think that he wanted to be seen as a bad boy, but I think it may have been misguided.
Absolutely. I don't know if he chased it or if it chased him. But
right, okay.
Either way,
he ended up with it.
He did embrace that, being the bad boy from New Edition.
Yeah.
Being the outcast.
Wow.
So, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
I never really looked at it that way, but yeah.
Well, you know, I want to, I want to end this, you know, on an upbeat, because, you know, it's really, I want to celebrate her and her gifts and how amazing she was and how, she blessed so many people like Herman. And I know other people like, you know, Pam and other people have been around her. And I tried to even, I mean, I was there when she auditioned for Clive Davis to be on Arista Records. And so it's, you know, there was something so special about her that everybody wanted to be around her. Yeah. And so, and so I just want to say to you, Herman, thank you for, you know, coming on and sharing, you know, some intimate stuff and I know it's hard for you sometimes to share since you haven't talked about it in a while, but we do appreciate you sharing, and it makes me it's just sad when you lose somebody so gifted, you know, and so, and not just the gifting part, but just so caring for other people, you know, I just wish that it could have been. She's gone now, and so
we
have to just trust God and keep moving, and being grateful
absolutely.
For it. Yeah, the time she was here. So,
grateful for the time.
Exactly.
I want to add this before we finish.
Okay.
The record, My Love Is Your Love, the record. I remember doing that with her on Jay Leno. That song on Jay Leno with Wyclef and his guys. And that was also a high moment.
Amen.
That for me. That was my only time working with Wyclef, but
that's awesome.
Wyclef and Whitney together, that was a joy.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Did
you ever get to write anything for her?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
I didn't.
Just checking.
Yeah, by the time, a lot in that period.
Right.
But by the time I came aboard, it was so high up that I couldn't. Yeah.
I hear you. All right. Well, we're going to get going here. Greg, is there anything you'd like to say in closing?
Yeah, just thank you for sharing that, Herman. That was fantastic. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you, guys, for having me. And thank you, guys, for allowing me to bring up some good memory of some good times.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you. And Mr. Jackson, we will be in touch with you because there's other things I would like to talk to you about, you know, in regards to our shows and stuff. So you need to put a panel together, a panel of musicians together to talk about some music stuff. So I want to give you a call and chop it up and see what your availability is. All right.
Okay, great.
Awesome, my brother. Well, God bless you and thank you. And
I'll be waiting.
Yes, awesome. Okay, and we'll talk to you soon. All right.
Cool, you guys. God bless you guys as well. All right.
God bless you too, and thanks. Tell Rocky thank you. Appreciate
him. All right, I will.
Yep. All right. So, all right, Greg. So we're gonna just go now to the workout. So guys, you know, Solar Wants to Dance. That's what the show is all about. And so we are going to work out to some Whitney dance music. Okay. Right. So want you guys to get ready for this, and she's going to close the show out. You know, you can't come back after Whitney. So
thank you.
And yes, you're welcome. And anyway, like I said, man, we're here for you, Greg, and sorry again for your loss, and thank you for calling in, and thanks for, you know, sharing your thoughts with Mr. Jackson there, Herman.
That was great. Thank you.
Yeah, and I did tell you Astra said hello, right?
Yes, she did. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Thank you for tonight. It's a privilege. I said thank you for tonight. That was a privilege.
Okay, awesome. Thank you for amazing flyers and all the postings that you're doing over there. That's awesome. So we're going to hit it right now, and this is going to close out the show. So I hope you guys have been warming up at least.
Not
so
me.
We'll get ready because we get ready to hit the dance floor with Ms. Whitney Houston here on Solar Records Radio. God bless you all. Have a wonderful Solar weekend. And tomorrow we're going to be doing our praise show at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we thank you all for tuning in. Much love to all you guys. Wherever you may be in the world, may God protect you and keep you safe. And we'll catch you guys a little later here on Solar Records Radio. It's time for Whitney. Good night, Greg.
I would only be in your way, so I go, but I know I'll think of you every step of the way. And
night, everybody. Good night. God bless you. Thanks for tuning in to Solar Records Radio. Thanks, Greg, for hanging out, my brother. All right. Be blessed, and we love you here, Solar. See you tomorrow, 3 p.m.
Strength of your